There are some specific issues that may also be taken up by this ad hoc committee, but today we want to put them on the table for public consumption at least.
Yes.
Go ahead, Mr. Yes. Baker.
Mr. Lank and myself worked on a listing of some issues that have been discussed and over the years regarding manufactured housing land use. We came up with a list of a few things. I'm sure there are many others, some talked about today. First is unenclosed steps and landings. Our ordinance currently allows a 4-foot encroachment into required setbacks, and there's so we'd have less variance requests. We could possibly exempt these steps from lot coverage calculation, from the 35% lot coverage calculation. Also, handicap ramps. Currently, if someone comes in to request a permit for a handicap ramp, if they are required to get a variance, it could take a month or more. Possibly, we could look at an exemption from the variance for required setbacks and lot coverage calculations with certain requirements such as a 4-foot width requirement, but it may allow that to exceed 28 square foot, and then make this subject to administrative approval, which is similar to what I think Mrs. Deaver was talking about, by county planning and zoning director and county administrator. That's one idea. Then variances for setbacks. This is an issue that's been brought up where we may require two variances basically for one change in the footprint. When a variance from a required setback is approved for an improvement, for instance, a shed on one property that may be within 15 feet of the neighbor's property, for instance, and then later on, 5 years later, whatever the adjoining property, the individual goes to replace their manufactured home, for example, then that person has to come and get a variance, even if it's on the same footprint. So there's two variances related to basically having the shed placed originally within 20 feet of the neighboring home. So a possible proposal would be to not require the second variance for the neighboring property as long as the neighboring property replaces the building or improvement on the same footprint. And then we talked about setbacks from property lines, 10 feet and 5 feet, and then setback from neighboring improvements, 20 feet, which it is also something that we just discussed also. Lot coverage requirement, currently improvements are a maximum 35% of gross area of the lot. Again, that there's been some discussion about that and proposals to make changes to that requirement. And then last, the definition for an accessory building. The actual definition, there is some question that maybe we ought to clarify that, because it does say that this is a subordinate building or a portion of the main building, the use of which is clearly incidental to a customarily found in connection with and so on. But it does say a portion of the main building. So that's a little confusing, because you think of accessory building as not connected building.
Well, we ought to have the word detached.
Detached, mm-hmm. Right.
And things that like that would be helpful.
Yeah.
The 35%, Lawrence, where did that ever come from?
It's been in the ordinance since 71, actually.
Okay.
If you took a lot 50 by 100 in Femagon,
right.
Fee simple ownership, and it's on a street, private street, it's got 30-foot setbacks on the front, 10 on the side, 10 on the rear. 10 on both sides and 10 on the rear. And you end up with about, what's the data? Didn't bring one.
Yeah.
It's a similar percentage to 35%, like 38 or 39%
of
buildable area. And so when the parks were established, we established that 35%. I'm trying just assuming that's what took place, but it's about the same as the smaller lots at the beach. Now the lots that we require today are bigger. The minimum size in a residential planned community would be 60.
Mm-hmm. Bethany Beach, I think at Old Bethany Beach, they have 40-foot lots and they have 7 foot.
And the setbacks are varied, but our setbacks are pretty much 10 feet,
yeah, 10,
30
right.
front.
Which is pretty generous.
The other thing is, and on a lot within a subdivision, you can, and it's a new improvement, you can do an average if the lot's pre-existing.
Well, I know this in the old, when I see the newer homes built in these smaller lots, like where we're talking about, driveways aren't big. It eats it up a lot, right?
They're so maxed. They're pretty much maxed out with lot coverage. Yeah.
So 35% is a good number you're comfortable with.
And the difference is you're taking it on the lots with like Fenwick Island. I use for an example. Excuse me. You're taking that 30, the whole front 30 feet, and the whole width of 10, and the whole width of on the rear as 10. You're taking up over 35% of lot, pretty much. Not in every case, but most cases.
Now if they use stones, they can get away with that, can't they? But if they put blacktop, covers it up.
Well, it's an issue. Then you deal with the conservation.
What do
conservation
you mean?
District on disturbance.
The main one reason was they want water to go back to the ground. If you put stones, the water can go through your driveway. And if you use blacktop,
well, I'm just trying to find out.
Allow water to go through that.
Yeah.
What's a typical size of a lot in a mobile home park today?
Minimum 5,000 square foot.
Which is like the old parts of
Bethany. That was approved since conditional use regulations were effective.
Okay.
Now they go into some of the older parks. There's some 40 by 90, some are 50 by 90, some are even.
But 50 by 100 is standard?
Pretty much standard.
Okay, so 35% you're comfortable is a good number?
It seems to work.
It's
similar to what the MR and GR would allow.
Right, I'm saying, okay, it
only
fits.
Because you're, but the setbacks are lower. A new park is 10 foot, and a non-conforming park is 5. There's been a suggestion that we change the setbacks to 10 and do away with the 5. Mm-hmm. That wasn't real receptive when we talked about it a year
in the old park.
Last year. In the older park, yeah.
Well, it's hard to go back in because they've got stuff, structures already
would
placed.
Would impact a lot more than by changing it back up to 10. You'd get a lot more variance.
Right,
than
but you say anything new now, anything coming in is 10 feet, just like it is in a GR zone or an MR zone or any, okay.
Yep.
Okay.
And the 20-foot spacing is another issue. That's still that's listed also. But.
And 20-foot spacing is determined to be safe because of fire marshals and other things?
We've had a couple board of adjustment approvals through for the whole parks that came in with letters from the fire marshal office that said that 15 was adequate. And the board granted variances in the whole park to allow 15.
Do you require
15?
I mean, is there any, Mr. Class, where did he go? Is there any national standard in your parks, you know, that you guys, your one of your professional organizations uses when you're laying out parts, when you bring in consultants to help you? Is there a standard?
Come up, Mr. Class.
Come on back up here. I just want to know.
Do I get a prize?
No, you don't. You don't get a thing.
Prize.
You don't get a thing.
Cup of coffee.
Oh, thank you.
And Joe's going to buy it. Hey, Clint, count yourself lucky.
Thank you. Steve Class, Georgetown Door. I'm sorry, Ms.
The question would be, I know that, you know, when with a lot of the planned communities, et cetera, you get all these experts out there. Is there any, guidelines for park owners and new parks, laying out new parks, et cetera, when it comes to what are adequate setbacks? What do the people who come into your type of living throughout the country now, what do they require as a standard?
I don't think the problem is with new development communities because the lots are larger, because the new homes being built are entirely different than what they were 35, 40 years
right.
ago.
Right.
The real problem is involved in the older communities.
Right.
Okay.
Right. Well, we can't do much with the older ones, but I'm just saying when I go to Florida and see some of these new ones, you're right, the homes look wide. They've got setbacks that are similar to the RPCs and, you know, with mm-hmm. the standard homes and things of that nature. So basically the standard setbacks that we use are fairly adequate.
For newer sites, it's not a problem.
20 feet, you don't think your people want to get their homes closer? I mean,
in
nobody
older,
wants their homes
in the older
closer.
Communities, yes, they do.
They want to be close?
Yes, sir. And it's not the reason because...
The tenants want to be close or the owners want you to be close?
The residents. We don't own the homes. We only own the sites,
right,
so it
right.
doesn't make any difference to us. What chattel or what home is what size of homes on the community? We don't get any additional revenue.
I've always wanted to keep as far away from my neighbors as possible.
Well, that's you.
No, seriously. You're not one of my neighbors now.
The problem we're running into is the older homes the Colonial East, for an example, they were designed under conditional use at 40-foot lots. Okay, it works fine with a 12-foot home that was the state of the art then. Nowadays, they do not manufacture 12-foot homes. Okay, or if they do, it costs as much as a sectional two-piece home. In order to provide a home that is much more energy efficient, with low insulated, low e-glass, shingle roof, 6-inch sidewalls, et cetera, you got to go to a minimum of 14 or 16 foot wide. The market pretty much determines they would like to go to a sectional home, which is 22 foot wide without having the porch. But we're running into real problems with the 20 foot isolation district, separation district.
Okay. And then just in the older parks?
Well, primarily, yes. Anything, you know, today, you know, conditional use still requires 50 by 100. Generally, you work ahead of time with that. It's not a problem. Occasionally, we'll have a resident wishes to add on to their home a little bit by putting an additional bathroom on. Then they go before council and not council, Board of Adjustment, get their variance because that's their own particular choice. What we're going to do as community owners is to provide a much more efficient, a safer home, a more aesthetically pleasing house, and we can't do it unless we go through the $400 procedure, and there, of course, there's no guarantee on that. So what we're having is people are actually saying, hey, if I can't improve my home by putting a nicer home, a newer home, I'm going to abandon the house, and that's what they do in some cases. We have to get out of that. We still have to provide affordable housing.
Well, I mean, are you ever going to combine two small lots and make big lots?
Yeah, but you have to have two together.
Two to go. Yeah. Two people leave at one time.
Yeah, kind of tough to do, and it's very seldom it happens. And the best way to do it would be to have three to combine two. But right now, we're watching everything that we spend. We're watching how we increase our fees on our monthly fees because everybody's having issues. I mean, we have to be competitive, and we also have to be ethical with people that are our responsibility.
Well, tenants. I get concerned though if after what Lawrence just explained, and we're looking at number four here about 35% lot coverage. I'm trying to find out, is that a good reasonable number?
In the newer communities, there's not a problem. Once again, in the older communities, you can't do it.
Because the lots are so little and people want bigger.
Yeah, I mean, we have to look at two different ways. Ask the people that live in the communities. Do a survey. You know, I would provide a survey to my residents if you guys want to see what they say. Okay? That's where we get our information from. They would rather have a much more efficient home, okay, like I said, a safer home with a drywall in it than an old home with crank-out windows and 3-inch sidewalls. Right? I mean, we have to grow up and... We're willing to.
I know, but I hate to set an ordinance. I hate to create a new ordinance based on the old parks. I think we need to have an ordinance that addresses parks, you know, that are we have now and into the future. Forget about the old parks. The old parks are just have to have a different set of rules, possibly. I don't know.
Well, you could. You got a minimum 5,000 square foot if you made reference in the ordinance to parks with less than 5,000 square foot lots.
We could make
some kind of consideration to a lesser. Yeah. Right. Percentage.
I mean, that may be in this ad hoc committee, you guys.
Right.
This could be a good topic to talk about because I think the 35% sounds very reasonable. And I think it's more pleasing.
How many trailers, mobile homes, if you manufacture housing, whatever you want to call it, how many have been abandoned because they couldn't put a bigger house on the lot?
Within the last 2 years? Percentage, I'm not going to give you a percentage, but I have 315 sites in one community, which was the older, smaller sites, and I say I had 10, 12 in the last 18 months.
They've abandoned.
Well, they've
gone.
And the homes are
We've changed our restriction requiring a home. About 10 years ago, I had a little old lady come in. This is a truthful story, and I'll be as brief as I can. She came in, bought a home from a private a seller the year before. She got her first gas and electric bill, and when she was paying $450 a month for gas and electric in this old 12 wide home with the crank out windows and 3-inch sidewalls, okay, we made a determination to work with our residents group to change our standards, which would require in 9 years, okay, which the state code now allows us to do, is to shingle the roof, put vinyl siding, thermal pavements, et cetera. But that's becoming cost prohibitive now. Okay, the older 12-foot homes, you still have the original 35-year-old plumbing, a 35-year-old floor.
Well, they have a value of almost zero.
Today, they hadn't until the last 18 months. Okay, but it's fallen through the floor. And
I'm saying there's no value then to add all those improvements to something that's got really no great value. It doesn't make good economic sense.
So the answer to my question was, in your facility, where you have 350 units, there are a dozen or 18 that are now there vacant. Nobody lives in them.
10 to 12, I think.
Less than 5%.
Well, they walk because they're older homes.
Yes, sir.
They're older homes, and the values, it's not worth them.
Not every single one is that, but the majority is for that purpose because it would cost them $10,000, $15,000 to improve it today.
Yeah, it's not worth it.
Where the market is devalued, you know, just like the foreclosure, if you look at the Sheriff Swanson's, all his notices, I mean, it's pretty tough out there for everyone.
Mr. Wilson. So,
I didn't. I just he nodded his head. That's enough said.
Okay.
I have a question about the 35%. I thought that was referring to structures. That's including driveways, and sidewalks.
Just the actual constructed
structures.
Could be the unit, the addition, the shed, the gazebo, or whatever.
Driveways at all?
No.
Okay.
But what Mr. Wilson was referencing, it can impact the stormwater regulations.
Oh, yeah. We're looking at what's safe as far as a fire marshal's concerned, and should that be changed, what would that be acceptable to the fire marshal?
Well, probably if there was sufficient water pressure and these fire hydrants placed around, we could get some sign off on that, but
I think Mr. Lank had mentioned it earlier. There were some communities that had the 15-foot. I don't believe they all have fire hydrants in them.
Now, I'd have to double-check which ones they were, but there was either two or three went to Board of Adjustment, and the applicants came in through their attorney with letters from the fire marshal's office showing support that 15-foot was adequate. In those cases, now it could have been bigger, larger lots. I'm not sure. I have to check and find out each one. Yeah,
right. I wouldn't go any smaller than 15 foot personally. Okay, I don't think
people need some separation.
The committee, or we can ask through staff and fire marshal to give us a response directly to us rather than to an applicant who was possibly pressuring them for information.
Any other questions from council for Mr. Class or Mr. Lang?
No.
I am going to allow the public, you can have a seat.
Thank you.
If anyone from the public would like to comment, we do have this on the agenda, so it would be appropriate. I'll give you a couple minutes. Yes, ma'am.
Hopefully I can answer some of those questions that came up. I don't have to swear myself.
You got a timer, 3 minutes.
Okay. Go back to the 35%. If you read the code, page 14 of 44, it clearly states it's 35% of 5,000 square feet. So it's already in the code. And it doesn't pertain to, like, Sierra. Sometimes that has been implemented in Sierra, but it shouldn't really be because our lots are small. If we have small lots and people come into our community, they're going to be buying a home according to the lot size. They're not going to look for a big double wide. The landowners are trying to bring in the big double wides. If you want a big double wide, there's other manufactured homes that you can go to or parks you can go to. So we don't have to have a lot of changes. What has happened a lot in our parks is they've gutted out homes. I have the oldest home, I think, around. It's historic. It's a 1964. Completely gutted out, completely redone. Down the road from me, I did another one. Completely gutted it out and redid it. We didn't have to bring a new home in. The landowners want to bring the new homes in. You have 35%, that is for a 5,000 square foot lot. Now, if you have a landowner that wants to bring in a double wide, they can't put it on the Board of Adjustments are letting them do it, they shouldn't be, but they're letting them put a double wide on a single wide lot. What they need to do is just what you suggested, Mr. Cole, that they need to change lot size. If they want to do that, change lot size and make it. In fact, the code should read and is stating that if you remove a home, it should be 5,000 square feet. If you remove a home, you shouldn't be bringing, not unless you want to replace it with the same size that you took out. You can't put a single wide lot and put a double wide home in it. We have one in there that the Board of Adjustments allowed to happen, and it's a big double wide on a single wide lot. You step out the back door and you're on somebody else's property. It's horrifying. The survey,
Please be brief. I'm going to have to...
Okay, the surveys. The surveys are state law. The surveys are to be... It doesn't mention surveys in the state law, but it does say that the landowner is to get the... give us the area responsibility. That is already covered. And
you know where that's found?
The drawing of the placement of the sheds and so forth, that should really be the placement of the shed should go to the landowner. The landowner should be responsible for knowing that that shed is not on somebody else's property or something. So we really have everything covered. I don't know why we would have all these meetings to change a lot of stuff. The only thing I was asking is that we take accessory buildings or sheds out of the mix, which, oh, I'm so grateful to hear what you were looking at doing, because it needs to be. And about the only park that it really affects is Sierre. We have had a terrible time. And in the past, we never had any problems with sheds. It's just recently.
Thank you. For the record, your name and address?
Jeannie Sisk, 19796 Sierre Avenue, Sierre Mobile Home Park.
Thank you. Anyone else? Please be brief.
Dixie. My name is Dorothy Boucher. I'm also known as Dixie. I am a tenant in a mobile manufactured, you all got me saying a word I hate, a manufactured home community, which I would like to note, Mr. Lang mentioned, I'm sorry.
No, go ahead.
Mentioned the number of parks. There are a number of issues involved here. You people are responsible for deciding, making decisions that affect our environment, our well-being of over 30,000 residents in Sussex County alone that live in manufactured homes. We like to call them communities, not parks. I live in one that has over 600 homes in it. Half of it's old, half of it's new. Things were done in the old park that are similar to what Sierra faces. It's a totally different picture on the other side, so we have diverse issues. The biggest problem that I see is that there's a great deal of confusion about the code. Are any of you, the people on the council, engineers? I don't think so. I've read that code, I've looked at it, and I consider myself a fairly intelligent person. I know you have to depend on the engineers and input to make your decisions, but what I'm asking you is to consider the fact that the tenants and the Delaware Manufactured Homeowners Association must be included, as well as the park owners or community owners, in discussions that you hold, because this affects too many people for it to be just one side or the other or the engineer's word.
I can assure you they'll be part of that ad hoc committee. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Did you give your name? Yes, Dixie, that's right. Anyone else before we move on the agenda? Please try not to be redundant, if you could.
She's never redundant.
You know what? Good if afternoon. She didn't use up all her sand. We might give you a little extra sand.
Mm-hmm. I'd love some extra sand.
Well, it got stuck.
The humidity or something.
Yeah,
go ahead, please.
My name is Roberta Hemrick, otherwise known as Bobby. I'm not going to say very much because it's all pretty well been covered, and I really want to thank all of you. I think we're headed in the right direction here. Certainly, Mr. Class, who happens to be one of the good guy landowners, is always helpful. Unfortunately, there's an awful lot of them that are not as good as Mr. Class. I know that members of DMHOA will be very, very happy to work on this, and I look forward to seeing some good results.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Anyone else with something new? It was brought to my attention today. There is at least one park out there that is building up the lots as the single wides are being replaced, which is causing some drainage issues. And I would encourage our planning and zoning department to enforce our code if that issue is something that needs to be addressed by this committee. We certainly want to encourage them.
I heard that they changed the lines in there after a survey was done. Some people had what they thought was their plot, and then all of a sudden they either lost some or gained some. Or
in Bay City.
In Bay City? That happened?
Yeah.
Huh?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And why did they have to do that? Can you clarify that? I'm always confused why something like that happened.
The There was a moratorium placed on Bay City through previous administration, I believe, or was it for Dave maybe? And then we required a survey. The surveyors went out and tried to establish the markers based on the drawing. If you see the original drawing of Bay City, it was done by Mr. Isaac Bennett, surveyor, who's been deceased now for many years, and then taken over by Walter Todd, another surveyor that's still living and getting up in age. Mm-hmm. And the surveys that Mr. Bennett did, the drawing, it looks almost freehanded. It's not real clear. There's no monumentation. There's no real questionable boundaries. The surveyors tried to take what they could find in the field and match as best they could what was on those plots, and came up and tried to make everybody's lots conform to the 5-foot setback requirements, mm-hmm. and tweak some lines.
So some lines were...
And a lot of lines were tweaked to make it work. They're similar, but they're not the same, that's for sure.
Now then,
and the commission approved it.
But they are, okay.
In the last year, I don't have the date with me, but they did.
Now we do have a survey.
We have a survey with monumentation that shows what's supposed to be in Bay City.
But didn't we have an appeal to that?
To my knowledge, I haven't seen an appeal yet. I haven't been told that there is an appeal.
Okay, I thought
there was an appeal presented to council for consideration. I believe that appeal would reference that it had to go through the courts.
Uh-huh.
Right.
Okay.
So they reference the subdivision regulations and rather than appropriate regulations.
Okay.
I mean, if the park, again, if the property owner is the park owner, right?
Park owner.
And then they change the lot lines, that's an issue between the park owner and those tenants, not so much the county, is it?
But now we have a plot. We have a plot we can use for enforcement of that boundary, so the boundary shouldn't change again. Okay. But now we have monumented lots.
Okay.
Before they weren't monumented well.
And on the drainage, what he was referencing on the drainage of the filling of some of that stuff, that's...
We've been working on that since 2003, I believe, and the county attorney that advised us that we don't have jurisdiction.
Was that the old county attorney?
Yes.
I would encourage our new county attorney
just
to look
review
at
that. Yes.
We can do that.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Lank. One more, I believe, Mr. Sir in the blue.
Yep.
My name is Dan Nguyen. I'm here actually wearing two hats this evening, or this afternoon. One as a property owner, Free Simple, who was surrounded by a trailer park by the name of Bay City, and the other as a friend and neighbor of dozens of people who live and rent lots off of a Bay City manufactured home lot. So I don't know if you've ever been able before to associate a face with a document, but I'm the guy who put together the final appeal or request to council to hear an appeal of what planning and zoning accepted as a survey, right, and a massive variance grandfathering of literally dozens and dozens and dozens of violations in Bay City that have been allowed to occur over the last, for sure, 10 years. 10 years of complaint letters going in the files, right, of planning and zoning, right, begging for planning and zoning to do their job, not new laws, not anything else, just enforce the code, which is only 5 sections: buffers, setbacks, usage, and drainage. I mean, how much simpler can you make, right? I happen to be a big believer in property rights. I'm not interested in getting into a long, voluminous list of all new laws and regulations that need to be passed. Right, I think if you just enforce the code that you have, and I've been before this council before, not this council, excuse me, the new makeup is significantly different than it was before. All right, I'm not asking, and I know most people aren't asking, for a whole battery, a barrage of new regulations that are going to make it difficult for everybody. In 1972, when this code was put together, right, the people that were sitting in your seats today put it together based on what they saw, right, was a necessity to improve the standards of living in what were then trailer parks. They've been referred to as trailer trash. They've been referred to as shanty towns. Fortunately, right, those councilmen saw the necessity to force some standard to come along, right, that would at least give a minimum upgrade of the living standards for trailer parks to trailer communities or trailer developments. These people constitute a lot of votes in this county. Mm-hmm. Right, and pay a lot of taxes, right? And they're all of a sudden being treated as second-class citizens, where we have all of this chain of walk-through variances with sheds standing on top of one another, right, where we have at least two violations that we've got before the Board of Variance right now, where there's 65% usage. In other words, 65% of the lot is built, right? And they're asking for a variance. Now, none of us will come to you and say, listen, you know, the guy's over a foot here or a foot there or something like that. And we're not interested in that kind of chicken stuff, right? What we're saying is that when you overbuild a lot, you do two things. You're going right back to where you were in 1972. You're creating shantytowns, which gave the parks and the people who invested money there that own these trailers. Now, I'm not talking about the landowner. I'm talking about the people, a couple of which you just heard now, who have invested all the money they have to buy this trailer and put it on this piece of ground. The landowner, he doesn't care. You heard this one gentleman say, it doesn't make any difference to him whether they put one on there or two on there.
Forgive me for interrupting.
One second. I'll wrap it up. Are we on?
Please.
Okay. Here's my own personal request, right? The code, the way it exists, is good. Lawrence and I have had, unfortunately, a lot of conversations where the code is not being forced. And now we have created a mess in some of these parks.
Okay, let
and
me stop you there.
It's not just Bay City.
The council has directed our new county attorney to review your appeal, to review the code, as you're indicating. I will have to stop you now because we are
fair enough. Could I ask you to do one thing? In your own county code,
yeah.
In your own county code, it says in section C, all right, that I can only appeal to the courts, right, after I have come to you to appeal. Now, I'm asking each of you, we put a packet together. I'm asking you to take a look at it and read it, right, because I don't think there's anything there that's unreasonable.
Okay, it is going to be reviewed. Thank you very much. No one else. I would like to thank the council for indulging the chair's request for public comments on this issue. This will be a rarity because of our abbreviated agenda. It offered us this opportunity to discuss this issue in more depth and allow for public comment. Mr. Baker, administrator's report.
The first item on the administrator's report is a workshop notice for the Indian River Inlet Bridge replacement project. The Delaware Department of Transportation will be holding a public workshop on Saturday, November 14th from 1 to 4 p.m. at the Indian River Inlet Bridge. Information about the bridge will be reviewed and be presented at that time. Next, on November 16th at 10 a.m. in the West Complex on North DuPont Boulevard in Georgetown, the Sussex County Advisory Committee for the Aging and Adults with Physical Disabilities will meet and hear Mr. Jess Quintero of the U.S. Census Bureau speak regarding the upcoming census. And we have a task is a media release put together by Mr. Guy. Next, foreclosure prevention seminar. Sussex County, in coordination with the Office of the State Bank Commissioner and Attorney General, will be offering a foreclosure prevention seminar in Milton, November 12th, St. John the Baptist Episcopal Church on Federal Street from 4:30 to 7 p.m. Jerry Kelly, Deputy Bank Commissioner, will provide an update regarding programs available for those behind their mortgages.
HUD
housing counselors will also be available to answer questions. For more information, contact Barry or Brandy Bennett at the Community Development Housing Division. The number's there. Also, there is several items that are not on there, but I wanted to make you aware there's a meeting this coming Saturday being held by the City of Rehoboth Beach, Rehoboth Beach Commissioners at the Firehouse on Rehoboth Avenue regarding a public hearing regarding alternatives for the city's treated wastewater, which now is treated and disposed of in the Lewis Rehoboth Canal. And then last, I wanted to make you aware that we have a department head who has 40 years of service last month with the county, who's in this room, and Mr. Lank.
40.
Now it's 40 years of service.
Is that why we call him grandfather?
Yeah.
Papa.
Yeah.
Papa. We've changed his name.
You are getting old.
He started here when he was 16.
How much older is he than you?
Mr. Baker, does he get a prize?
I'm older than him, by the way.
Yes, we'll give him he can have a county pen.
You're going to give him a county pen?
Mr. Baker, on this last item, this is regarding ocean outfall versus land treatment?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Is it our engineering department that is participating in the study?
Yes, our engineering department participated in the study with the city of Rehoboth. Their consultant did the study primarily regarding the outfall cost and evaluating that alternative. And then our consultant worked on the spray irrigation options, and that was discussed at a number of different previous county council meetings. But my understanding is the city of Rehoboth intends to evaluate the spray alternative versus the ocean outfall alternative.
Okay, now this whole issue is now in their hands, right, at this point, because we've taken our position, correct?
Yes.
So we're pretty firm where we are. So we're not going back and forth again unless something really dramatically changes?
Yes, my understanding in talking with the mayor is that their intent is to evaluate the two options, and then whatever option
that's the direction they'll go.
That would be the direction, and they would talk to us, of course, about it, because no matter what we're involved, we'd do it
right.
Beach and Hinlopen Acres at a minimum.
Okay, but they're basically calling the shots at this point on this.
To making this decision, for them, right? Okay. Yes.
And, you know, I had a question through First State Action about Ellendale, and they're interested in, you know, putting in their own water system. They were asking me if they need to have a referendum, but you said you don't have that information. Do they need to have a signed referendum to proceed?
If they wanted to establish a county water district, then we would have to
go through
a process.
Right, but no, they've said no.
They said no, so it's a town. I'm not sure what the town code requires.
Okay, so that's up to them to find out the legal requirements there. Okay, thank you.
Anything else for Mr. Baker? Ms. Cooper.
I'm not going to take up a lot of your time, but I have a motion here for a project completion, for substantial completion and return of the retainage, that I'd like to show you, if you don't mind. It'll just take a couple minutes, the project and a few photos. And this is for the Industrial Air Park GAC filtration and building. That's granulated activated carbon, which we're using to remove a volatile organic compound from the water at the air park. It's tetrachloroethylene. And for the past year, we've been running filter tanks and running off of one well pump. With the completion of this project, now we're back to being able to use both well pumps, and there will never be a shutdown of the filtration system the way it's set up. Okay.
She's pretty good.
Let's see. Thank you. That's just a brief description of the project. This project was 120 days long. It was successful, and it also had no change orders. We had 10 bids, which we awarded on March 13th. This bid went for $189,573, which was significantly less than the highest bid. The highest bid was over $160,000 more than that. Okay. Now, this project...
So you say it was done in-house, is what you're saying?
No.
Design? Yeah, the design.
The design was in-house, through our engineering department.
Right.
And we bid it out, and it was constructed by Shoreline Construction of Smyrna.
Okay, good.
Thank you. This is the building itself. This houses our filtration units, and it's on the site of our water treatment facility at the airpark. It's 888 square feet. The ceilings are 16 feet high, and I know you're going to ask why, so the next picture shows you that.
Got a big truck, tall truck you want to put in.
I can get this to work. Uh-oh, back one.
There's Julie.
There we go. Whoa, whoa, whoa.
Oop.
Maybe I should. Okay, this is why the door and the ceiling has to be so high. These are the two filter units. Each of them holds 8,000 pounds of granulated activated carbon, and they are 13 feet high. You have to, when you do replace the carbon, you have to open the manway that's on the top of the tank to put the new carbon in. That's the reason for the large opening. You have a, you actually install the carbon by using a small conveyor system from out here up to the tank itself. And the door is 20 feet wide, and you can see why. You remove the carbon through these two manways here. Okay. Wait a minute. One more. Whoa! Okay. This is a computer representation of the arrangement of the piping and valves for the filtration unit. And I'm not going to go into detail on their setup, but they are the way they are so that you can run these two filter units in four different ways. There's four different setups for these. Now, this is what the contractor used based on my specifications for what we wanted to get our approval on the arrangement of the piping. And so when they got the piping installed, this is what it looks like. This is the inside of the building behind the door that you saw in the other photo. This is the back of the tanks. That's tank one, that's tank two. You have water coming from well pump number one through this side. You have water from well pump number two coming through here. And back there, you can't see it very well, is the discharge that the treated water goes through to the system, which is our water storage tanks and our chlorination.
Is it anything like reverse osmosis?
Not at all.
Nothing at all.
All it is the water comes comes into the top of the tank, goes down through the carbon, which removes the contaminant, then it comes back out. It's very simple.
Okay.
It's the carbon itself absorbs any impurities in the water. That's about it, except for I just wanted to point out the cost of the project. These two filter units were 43% of the entire cost. They're very expensive, and that actually came in very low. The piping was about 20%, and the building, including the HVAC, the electric, was only 35%. So it was actually a very economical project. Also, our rental tanks are now gone. We're not paying any more rent as of, I think it was October the 23rd, that we finally were able to put these online and return the rental units.
Thank you very much. Have you a motion regarding these?
Yes, I do.
Very good.
If nobody has any questions. Mm-hmm. Be it moved, based on the recommendation of the Engineering Department, that Sussex County Council grant substantial completion effective October 13th, 2009 for Sussex County Project 0902 Industrial Air Park GAC Filtration and Building to Shoreline Construction Incorporated, and that final payment be made and any held retainage be released in accordance with the terms and conditions of the contract documents.
Question, what is the total cost?
The total cost of the project was $189,573.
And what was the retainage?
The retainage is $9,479.
Any other questions from council? Entertain that motion.
I'll make it.
Second.
I have a motion and a second to approve the substantial completion and return of retainage read by Ms. Cooper. Is there any questions? If not, we'll take the vote. Ms. Deaver?
Yes.
Mr. Vincent?
Yes.
Mr. Wilson?
Yes.
Mr. Cole?
Yes.
I vote yes. Motion carried. Thank you, Ms.
Good job.
Cooper.
Thank you.
Mr. Moore, are there any ordinances to introduce?
No, Mr. President.
Mr. Guy, are there any? Is there any additional business to be brought before council?
Three, but I believe they've already spoken.
There's nobody here except Mr. Is Mr. Kramer on there?
Jeannie, Sis, Dixie, and Roberta have been taken care of. Hear them now or hear them.
Make a motion we go into executive session.
We have taken that off the agenda. I will entertain a motion to adjourn.
I'll do that.
Second.
I have a motion and second to adjourn. Any discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Motion carried.